for tournament.
Days to get rid of the negative effects it has on communications and mechanical things. So by October 5th, it's all clear.
Okay, well, hang on to that. Folks, welcome to another episode of the Dawn of Shades. I'm your host, Gia Scott, and today is September 29th, 2009, and this is episode 326. This is the last show of September. It's also supposed to be the last day of Mercury being in retrograde. As y'all heard Angela say, it may not be over that quickly. I'm not an astrology expert, but I have been told that Mercury in retrograde means all sorts of glitches in equipment, communications, and transportation. So we can't hope for tomorrow to be a better day, but hey, like Angela was saying, by the 5th it should be getting much better. I know that we have had some serious computer problems, telephone problems, and knock on wood, the car has worked just fine. I'm nursing a lovely case of the flu, which hopefully is headed south for the winter now, as I've grown a little tired of its company. Originally, we were going to have Marie Jones and Larry Flaxman on tonight, but remember that Mercury retrograde. It seems to have affected them as well, and they had to reschedule for October. Tonight, though, we've put together a wonderful panel with some of your favorite radio personalities, and we're going to be taking questions from the audience via Twitter, Facebook, email, and the virtual auditorium. So get ready to connect somewhere. On Twitter, I'm Gia Scott without a space. Links are found to both my account and Greg's account on our website, www.exogenynetwork.com, for both Facebook and Twitter. To email a question to me, my email address is giascott@gmail.com. And I'll be monitoring the email through the entire program. The two ladies joining us tonight on our little panel are November Hansen, host of the wildly popular Voice of the People radio program, which airs on Saturdays on UPRN. Angela Thomas is a well-known psychic in her own rights and previously was one of the hosts on the Portal Talk radio program. Also joining us is Gregory Miller from Exogeny Network, a familiar voice on the Dawn of Shades, as he works hard to make sure that we have a great website and fantastic guests each week. Now I'm going to let everybody finish their own introductions. So, Angela, would you go first?
Well, thank you for the great introduction. My name is Angela Thomas, and I am a psychic clairvoyant and happy to be with everyone tonight.
Okay, November, you're going to come up next.
Oh, okay, up to the plate. Here I go. Yes, I'm November Hansen, host of Voice of the People Radio. Broadcast on Saturdays from 6 to 8 p.m. on this network, Pacific time. Gosh, what else do you need to know? I've been crazy days. I've been undertaking the ET Research Project of the Century. Yes, I'll talk about that in later times. Thank you, Gia.
Okay, and Gregory, now you're it.
Oh, that's good. I get that. Well, I help produce this show. I do the website. I call people like Angela at the last minute and ask them to come on when some of our wonderful guests end up having technical problems. And then I end up learning very interesting things, like today being the last day of Mercury in retrograde, which had been brought to my attention by friends that we have here locally. I just hadn't been paying too much attention to it. And, you know, I end up learning some things the hard way. I'd like to thank everybody for listening, and thank you, ladies, for having me on to annoy you.
Annoyance. Well, ladies and gentlemen, our topic for tonight is current and upcoming events, which is just bad enough that we could all hang ourselves and a few other people, too. But, you know, current events, are playing out, even so much as, you know, the flu going around very early in the year. You know, that's, you know, had all sorts of conspiracy stuff attached to it. You know, the political climate, the financial climate, all of these things are playing out now and are going to continue to play out over the upcoming days, weeks, months, and even years. You know, so what do you think is going to be happening? Why do you think it's going to be happening?
It isn't going to be dull, I don't think. That's really interesting, Gia. We've gotten the flu. I work in education, so we've gotten hit with the flu quite early, much, much earlier than usual. And there is some potential cases of H1N1 that are being, well, they're in the works right now, being tested. And I thought, if you even suspected somebody had H1N1 in a school, it was immediately shut down. This year we have new directions. We're not closing for it. So that was an interesting twist.
When I became sick with the flu, the first thing I did was check the CDC website, you know, a little curious about what they were saying about H1N1. And what it's basically saying is that unless you are having severe life-threatening symptoms or are a member of one of the high-risk groups, don't bother going to your doctor and don't bother asking for a test. You know, stay home, take care of yourself, and reduce exposure to other people.
You know, ladies and Greg, I did notice today, November, you said about education, really looking at the H1N1 flu virus. You know, schools in Missouri in the United States certainly have now started to set up clinics where the students can go in and get a flu shot. So I thought that was very, you know, proactive on their part, and I'm glad to see that that's happening.
It's very interesting. And then you have the flip side of everything is we have the conspiracy bent, and we also have the notices going around saying that one of the, nasal application sprays could be tainted with actual live H1N1 virus. So I would caution everybody to throw a little salt over your shoulder and do some research into what you're reading as you go along this path, especially if you have kids that are in school. If you do have, you know, concerns, make sure you call the school administrators and find out if they have, you know, a plan to, you know, shut things down in the event that there's an outbreak.
Well, very good, yeah. Greg. So
yeah,
what do you all get on the international scene?
Oh, well, there's a tsunami, which we talked about, and an earthquake that happened today. As I, you know, kind of hit the websites looking at the news, you know, we're seeing 14 deaths reported after an 8.0 Samoa quake. That was a 20-minute-old announcement just before the show started. Roman Polanski has been arrested in Switzerland. You know, there's not the usual assortment of a mixture of crap. I'm going to talk about Yellowstone. That might be a little interesting because Yellowstone is one of those big things that, you know, we've heard a lot of talk about from various doomsayers, how it's going to blow and essentially kill the entire Earth. And now I think it's just telling us that there's a forest fire from the looks of the pictures. Yeah, but it looks like there's a forest fire there. No, I was a little worried that they had hot spots due to their volcanic activity. But they're saying that it was probably started by a lightning strike, which is kind of normal for this time of year, I think, you know?
Well, this time of year generally brings up some unusual things, doesn't it? I mean, you know, from this time of year all the way through December, we see a lot of tsunamis and earthquakes and things of that nature. So if we remember when 9 countries were affected back in December of 2004 with that large tsunami, you know, it's almost as though we hold our breaths every year, you know, crossing our fingers that it does not happen to them again.
Right, and this year we're happy to be lucky in that we got one of those friendly El Nino effects, so we didn't have too much of a hurricane season here.
Hallelujah, and knock on wood.
Well, hurricane season's not quite over, Greg. You know, as we know, hurricane season does end in November, and we have seen it go in the recent years to December. So, you know, knock on wood, it has been an unusual cool summer for the majority of the United States, especially in the Gulf states like Louisiana. And so, you know, maybe that's a big blessing.
Well, I don't know if it's been so cool here. June was exceptionally hot here in Louisiana. And then September's been very, very warm.
Mm.
But July and August seem to be, you know, about average. You know, nothing notable there. And the lack of storms was certainly a boon for everybody on the Gulf Coast. You know, I just really just didn't need any more.
Well, you know, here in the Midwest, July was relatively cool. It wasn't, you know, that 90 to 100 degrees and high humidity. And August really was not either. In fact, there were some evenings that it was, you know, 58, 65 degrees at night. So, and that's not typical.
You know, from everything I've heard from people in the Northeast, it was dreadfully wet. They couldn't do basically anything they planned on doing outside, painting houses. You know, gardens failed, all kinds of, you know, just wet weather havoc for them. And fall has set in. Hopefully that's all over. And hopefully we don't end up with a really, really bad deep freeze of a winter because of all of this. And I'm just going to keep hoping.
Mm-hmm. Let's keep
fingers
crossed.
Pumpkin crop in Maine, I think it was, failed.
Really?
Too much water.
Yeah. Too much rain.
That's amazing.
Too much rain.
So, we'll just have to send a truckload up there to them.
Yeah, it kind of ruined your Halloween, you know, themed hay rides and visits to the pumpkin patches and whatnot because they just didn't have them. And,
well, you know.
Go ahead.
Well, this time of year, you know, is always very interesting. Pumpkins are not, right? You know, the atmosphere gets thinner and things get very interesting, don't you think?
Well, you know, I think just about every month of the year has some incredibly interesting stuff going on. October, though, is associated strongly with Halloween and therefore with paranormal things.
Right, right.
Of all kinds, you know, spooks and hauntings and ghost stories and, you know, anything scary is strongly associated with October.
Absolutely. Well, you know, the reason why people would dress up in Halloween costumes was to scare the spirits away. And so that was an originally pagan tradition. And so that's been, you know, with all the school children nowadays, you know, still trick-or-treating out there. Although, what do you all think about trick-or-treating? Do you think that it's changed over the last several years?
Absolutely. It's commercialized.
Very
commercialized. And I don't enjoy it.
Think about it. You can't let your kids go trick-or-treating, even in your own neighborhood. When I was a kid, you could get things like popcorn balls and cookies and cupcakes and, you know, normal homemade sort of treats.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if your kid comes home with that sort of stuff in their bag, that's going to the trash.
I know. Isn't that a shame? You know, because I do remember being able to walk all over a small town to anybody I really wanted to go to, whatever neighborhood I could get to. And many of those people would invite you into their homes for punch or, you know, pie or something of that nature. So I think children of today really do miss, they're missing out on what we enjoyed.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely
a whole different experience.
Oh, yes, we used to go to Halloween parties, Bob for apples and, I don't know, play games and hear ghost stories, and, you know, it was a lot of fun. They don't do stuff like that anymore. If they do anything, they're haunted houses where they scare little kids half to death, and, you know, it's to me, it's not funny.
Right, and you get to go to the mall and pick up your candy.
Right. Yeah.
Well, I got to, I've been helping a nonprofit group. I'm coordinating a Halloween event for them, a fundraiser. And we were trying to set up kids' games. In today's society, because of the tendency to sue, every time something goes wrong, we can't bob for apples. There's too much risk of contagious stuff happening. You can't do a lot of the games because of risk of somebody catching something or somebody getting hurt or whatever, you know. And so when you try to come up with carnival games for little kids that are safe and acceptable in today's society, you've got a real short list.
Well, that's when you'll have to become very creative, Gia.
Well, you know, we're going to be stirring alligator eyeball soup, you know, and that's putting eyeballs in a little mini pirogue. And we're going to be feeding the ghost, which will be a beanbag toss. You know, but really, you know, bobbing for apples, I remember that as being a lot of fun. Pin the tail on the donkey, even. You know, somebody might get hurt. You're dealing with something sharp, you know. Just can't do that. So it is, it's a different world entirely.
It definitely is.
Actually, I'm not so sure that it bothers me so much right at the moment. It's that different world 20 years from now that I find it rather creepy and scary.
Oh, that's right, November.
I mean, if you think about it, times have changed. You know, there is a procession of change. And each generation, it becomes more lax, less trusting, less, well, for good reason. There's more crime. There's more, you know, it deteriorates, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Each generation seems to deteriorate more than the last. So right now, you know, it looks kind of, well, not very pleasant to us. How about 20 years from now?
You know, that's kind of spooky because that deterioration is what you see at the end of a civilization.
Right.
Are we at the end of our civilization?
Well, you know, some people believe that, you know, not only with the 2012 theories out there, but also that, you know, those history professors are saying, you know what, Rome fell, and so will the United States and other countries. So I think that anything is possible out there.
Well, I think everybody becomes, what's the term, you know, where they just, they only care about their own little teeny itty-bitty space. They become complacent.
Right.
Everybody becomes complacent, and things continue to deteriorate until they've got so far, that's when society, well, fights back. That's when you have your civil wars, your little turfs, and your little, all those little things going on until, you know, until it completely falls. And then people get together and say, wow, you know, what did we do? And they begin to rebuild a new society.
Well, tell me what you all think about this. I'm glad you mentioned civil wars within, you know, a society because, you know, I was in a conversation the other day regarding the United States political scene. And one of those topics was, you know, are we going to see another civil war between Democrats and Republicans? What do you all think?
I would hope that we don't.
A civil war between political parties. Not to say the civil war is impossible, but I don't see the political parties as being the catalyst.
Well, I mean, I know what you're saying right there, but if we go back a little bit, you know, when Bush ran for a second election and Kerry lost to Bush, you know, they really had to ramp up Clinton and Bush Sr. and get them out there on a PR campaign to try to get Democrats and Republicans to work together because there were so many independent groups claiming that they were going to riot if their candidate did not win. And so I thought, you know, this is the first time that I really felt, you know, concerned that, you know, United States citizens would, you know, think of rioting and hurting one another because of their own candidate not winning. So, you know, I just threw it out there because I think that, you know, the United States will see internal conflict among its citizens. And I do hope that it is not due to political disagreements.
I could see civil unrest occurring on even a fairly grand scale. A civil war, though, and all out, you know, guns and lines drawn and bombs and airplanes, and that one seems almost unfathomable. But, yeah, I mean, stranger things have been known to happen. But intense civil unrest, like I said, people will get to a point where, you know, it's getting too close to their own backyard, and they're going to, there's going to be a backlash. You know, looking at things that go on in the news that everybody is so complacent about, and nobody really wants to bring up, the children locked in the closet for years on end, the ones stuck in some kind of weird thing in somebody's backyard for 15 years, that the family, the druggie that went in and killed his family of seven, including the little babies. Right now, everybody is very complacent over stuff like that. It's like, oh, it's in the news. Nothing wouldn't happen around where I live or anything like that. But if those types of things begin to grow, you know, people will get to a point where it's like, you know, I want somebody to do something about this.
Right. And, you know, I really would love to see a national database started here in the United States and have somebody high in the media, whether that's Oprah or whomever, that would help to sponsor and, you know, get different sponsors that sell products and services to families and children, because, you know, I have been involved in missing children cases for 6+ years. And one of the things that I found out is that every day over 25 telephone calls come into the FBI office that have had abductions and endangered missing children. And part of that also includes runaways, but, you know, the majority of those are abductions. So if we think of over 2,500 calls that are solid cases, you know, that's pretty scary. You know, if we had 2,500 deaths per day happening in the United States due to, I'll say, some illness, then that would be cause for national concern. But I'm not seeing national concern whatsoever. We see a few missing children or murdered children on the news, the main news at night. And that's it. But, you know, currently there's over 800,000 missing children in the United States alone.
That brings us to another thing. You know, there's been talk over the years about this microchip business that would allow these kids to be tracked, even be it by satellite. And what do you think about that?
No, I'm not sure I'm against it. I do think it really boils down to a parental decision. I don't know about something mandated. But as a parent, if I was a parent of young children in today's world, I might would seriously do that.
You know, I think, thinking back, and thinking, because I had an abduction attempt on my daughter when she was about 18 months old, and it didn't even result in him ever having physical contact with her. You know, it was one of those things that he caught my attention, and I was watching him before anything ever happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I was lucky, you know. I was lucky. I'll admit that, you know. But thinking back to that event and the paranoia that it resulted in, I think I would be for it. But, you know, what would even lay my mind to more rest is if after adulthood, it was removable.
Well, you know, let me just put my own little 3 cents in there on that. You know, perhaps we don't have to go to the extreme of microchips for children, because I know that there's a lot of privacy issues and a lot of concern by citizens that it could become a Big Brother type of thing. But, you know, what do you all think about having something that is a temporary, like a GPS device that children could wear when they are leaving the house, let's say school-aged children, for example, walking to school, or when mom takes the child out to the park or to the mall, and that way, should the, you know, something happen to the child, then that GPS system would be able to locate them right away.
I have no problem with that myself. It reminds me of, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to talk over everyone, but it reminds me of the medical bracelets that the kids wear, you know, in case they have a medical condition. To me, it's almost as if society has a medical condition and we're trying to treat it that way, and I'll let you ladies go on.
actually, Greg, that's a really good point, though. It's like we're looking for technologies and ways to keep children safe. Can't we just have a society where they are safe? Maybe we're looking in the wrong direction.
Yeah, you know, that could be. As far as the GPS device goes, I know that you can buy it in a collar to use on your dog. Therefore, it has to be available to use on your child. Why I've not seen it in the market, I don't know. But I have to admit, I spend more time looking at new pet products on the market than I do on new child products.
Right,
you know, where I don't
right.
have a young child myself, that's not something I stay up to date on. But I've not heard of it in the mass media. And that, you know, would be an, you know, it's pretty affordable. I'm thinking for a dog, it runs about $200. I'm not sure what the subscription fee is, but, you know, really in terms of your child's safety, that's not a lot of money.
No, it's not. But then, of course, you know, you have a lot of people that would place a financial hardship for them to be able to spend, you know, $200 on a child or per children, right? But, you know, I think that there is an easier way, because if we just look at some criminals that are under house arrest or, you know, that are able to go out and do some work in the community and then they have to return and sign into a halfway house or whatever, you know, that technology is in place. And I think that we could take that technology and not, of course, put an ankle bracelet on a child, but some smaller device in which he or she can carry along with them, or if, you know, it's a toddler or an infant, then the mother can place it within the clothing or whatever. And one of the virtual auditorium guests, who is an astrologer, had said, you know, mentioned that, you know, maybe it would not deter some of the kidnappers, that they would look for a child and then cut it off or cut it out of the clothing or whatever the case may be. But I feel that, you know, yes, in some cases I believe that there would be individuals that would do that. However, there would, I think it would offset a lot of things, don't you think? That if you grabbed a child, then, you know, the consequences of being discovered within minutes would, you know, be too high.
I mean, one of the things that what you're bringing up, Japan, which is a little different than a lot of other places in the world, they have the world's largest concentration of available vending machines. Right. And one of the things that you're charged up in there, they actually one of the type of alert-based could push their situation, needed medical help, somebody was trying to abduct them. And then the companies outfitted the vending machines with video cameras, which function at a high speed, so that if any of the kids ever pushed the little panic device, since there are so many different machines around, all the machines in the area would start going off and filming that that approximate area. And then if something happened to the child, you know, it's being caught on tape somewhere. But I don't know if some of the places here in the United States, you might have a vending machine down, you know, at the, outside of the supermarket in the small town. You know, it's just completely different there. The huge population centers that they have. And I mean, that's just an example, but I think that's about what we would really, you know, we need to come up with something close to that.
Well, I think that alone would be an excellent idea, and it would be affordable to the majority of households, and it would be portable, and you could take it off, and no worry about Big Brother watching.
It's just interesting to know.
We just have to have some alternative to the vending machine routine, because there again, you know, vending machines are just not all that common. I can think right within a 4-block radius of where I live, there's not, I don't recall any, well, there's a water machine in front of one of the grocery stores. That's it.
Right, but
you
children
know,
go to many different places, right? You know, we see more of the cameras close to schools.
It would depend on where they were being abducted from, because most kids are being abducted from places like malls, bus stops, vicinities of schools, parks, and those places in the United States are a little shy on vending machines.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
Why they got these traffic cameras everywhere? Why couldn't it activate a traffic camera?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
well, we're just going to have to come up with a system.
you know, you push a button where every time you went through past one of these traffic cameras, it kicked off the traffic camera, and it'd be something.
Well, why don't we do something about getting rid of some of them off the streets? I mean, seriously, how many times is it somebody who has already done something before? You know,
they've already statistically proven that child molesters are going to they're going to commit new crimes. When they're released, they're going to commit new crimes.
I think you should put them on a high-security island with themselves and say, have a great time. I'm sorry. I'm a very liberal person, but I have no compassion when it comes to stuff like that. None.
Yeah.
Well, what is a virtual... Go ahead, in November, go ahead.
No, I was done.
Well, I was just saying that one of the virtual auditorium guests was saying, you know, maybe chip the pedophiles. But, you know, there's going to be groups out there that say, wait a minute, it's against their rights as, you know,
why do they have
individuals.
Rights? This is what I don't understand. Why
do
they have rights for people who have committed crimes in society? I don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in today's society, a criminal has more rights than a victim.
Obviously.
That's all. You know, a victim has no rights to even medical assistance if they're the victim of an assault or attempted murder. They don't even get assistance with medical treatment for their injuries.
Wow.
I mean, yet if a suspect is injured during the arrest process or becomes ill while incarcerated, they get treatment.
And we're making a big deal about a national health care. I take it away from all those criminals in prison and give it to the kids who need it, who may not commit crimes later on. We have a really backwards way of doing our society.
Well, I agree with you there.
Yeah, this health care plan, I can see this becoming a bigger fiasco than anything else that we've got currently on the game plan for anything going on politically. The rumors are rampant. The plans are almost as rampant as the rumors about them. You know, I've been told things like they're going to charge everybody $200 a month. Well, you know, if you don't have insurance, you probably cannot afford to give $200 a month up out of your income to pay for any kind of insurance.
Right, and that certainly is a rumor going on. You know, I listened to the Obama healthcare speech, and I listened very intensely because I also had to produce a case study on it. So, you know, I was doing a lot of typing and transcribing as he was talking, and so he did say that, you know, he does want to keep it a free, open market where people have choices of which insurance company they want and to what extent beyond basic coverage that they would like. However, for those who suffer or is suffering financial hardship, then the government would provide that population with basic health care. So I think that that's going to be, you know, something that we hear in the news again and again until it's passed.
Well, I have a question for you, Angela. As an intuitive person, you know, what vibration did you get when you were watching that speech and Joe Wilson decided to be the first congressperson ever to you know, scream at the President of the United States and say, you lie? I mean, I have to ask.
Well, as an intuitive, you know, there's not much I can say intuitively about that because, you know, then that would be in a whole new show. But as Angela, I have to say that I found it very inappropriate for, you know, no matter who disagrees with, you know, the president, whether they're Republican president or Democratic president, I think that there should be at least respect shown to that individual as well as those that are in attendance. And so it really did take me back that, that you know, one of our own would be, you know, showing himself on national television.
It's very interesting to me because the point I wanted to make with that too is you may or may not be aware of it. Somebody actually had the wherewithal to register one of those little games everybody likes to play on Facebook, and they had it pulled down The Secret Service is investigating it, and their poll question to the Facebook audience of 300 million people worldwide was, should Obama be assassinated?
Ooh.
And
I have to tell you, intuitively, there's a lot of things going on with that, but, you know, I think that the Secret Service should, you know, really get on that very quickly.
But it's against the law to threaten the life of the president. Period. It doesn't matter if you like them, don't like them, agree with them, think they're the Antichrist, or whatever. You know, the thing is that is against the law to even make that comment in passing or in joke.
Oh, I know.
No, we all know that. We all know that.
Well, therein lies part of our problems. We have developed a society where you can, you don't have to follow the laws. You know, you can find ways around it. And what kind of example does it leave for the younger generation? What incentive do they have to follow the laws if they want to do something different?
Exactly. Exactly. So, you know, I must tell you that I am a conservative. And, you know, I am one that sees both sides of the fence. However, you know, when it comes to liberals that are allowing certain things to happen, it really does concern me, because just like you say, November, that, you know, what is that, you know, what kind of signal does that send to our children in the future to say that, you know, you can disrespect the, you know, one of the largest leaders of the world and the men and women in the room and not pay any consequences for it? I find it very disturbing. So,
and that's just a tiny example, actually. I mean, that kind of problem is widespread. You know, illegal immigration. You know, I understand why the people are coming over here. I really don't even blame them, but the law is the law. You know, if there is a certain way to follow to become a United States citizen, that's what you do. And nothing's done to them. Seriously, what, they deport a few and they all come back anyway. So that one's a really hard one for me, because I do understand why they would want to leave an impoverished nation. On the other hand, you know, we're also a nation of laws and rules to make our society work. Well, our laws and rules are not working.
No, they are not. We've lost Angela. We'll have to reconnect to her when we're on the break. It's unfortunate, but sometimes that happens. And we can't do it until we go to break. But I think we lost Greg, too. Are you still with us, Greg?
No, God, I heard him in the background. Nope, sorry, I'm gone too.
Yeah. We'll reconnect with both of them on the break. So for the next few minutes, November, it's just you and I. Yeah, we'll take comments from the virtual auditorium. You know, we've had a lot of things said in, you know, talking about the stimulus pack and all that kind of stuff going on, and the health care. You know, and even when we were talking about the threats against Obama, you know, I can see, and when we talk about civil war, I can see that absolutely,
you know,
precipitating something like that.
Gee, let's be honest, that was predictable, absolutely predictable, because no matter, people brought in the race thing, they were going to do it. It was predictable, and because of that, sometimes I turn on the media and I. No, actually, I haven't turned it on for a long time. I just read blips on the Internet. But I listen to what's going on out there, and I'm like, what are they trying to do, resurrect the civil rights, you know, the 1960s era, you know, type of thing? I thought we got past that. It's like they're trying to bring all that garbage back.
We fought long.
Yeah.
You know.
And they make that, everybody's harping on Obama's black. Hello, he's half white. Now, What would have happened if Obama looked like his mother? Would they still have harped on him? And that, do you see what I'm saying? They're looking at the exterior of the person and making the judgment are based on that.
I really don't care if he's black, white, green, polka
dot,
right? I mean, you know, his race is irrelevant. Whether I like him or don't like him is not based on the color of his skin.
Exactly. But so many people want to bring that out, and I don't understand why. It's like, come on, this was a long time ago. We need to quit living in the past.
Well, and too, I heard a lot of people saying, well, you need to vote for Obama because he's black.
Yeah, I heard that too.
That's just as racist as voting for somebody because he's not black.
Right.
Yeah, I don't see any difference. No. You know, and so that whole thing was played out last year, I thought, but it's continued.
Yes, it has.
And, you know, is it about whether or not he's black? I'm not seeing anything different. Whether or not he's black, and as far as, you know, how he's performing in the presidency. Of course, there again, you know, I don't know how he'd perform if he was white. You know, or if he was blonde and blue-eyed. You know, would it really make any difference?
Yeah. No, it didn't.
Would the stimulus pack have worked if he had blue eyes?
No. And that's true. It didn't. I don't know what they stimulated. Maybe a few little fish down in California. I'll be honest. I did vote for him. I voted for him because I wanted something different, and the difference so far hasn't neither been good nor bad. So I'm not sure at this point in time would it have made any difference as to who became president. We were so far in the hole to begin with.
Well, yeah, and a lot of people want to blame, you know, our current economic situation on him. But at the same time, all this started with Bush in the White House.
Exactly. And what about responsibility? People don't
want to take responsibility. And a lot of people, the responsibility goes way back to before Reagan.
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
You know, this didn't happen overnight.
No.
You know, the whole situation is the result of decades of foolishness.
Yeah. And you know what? Even more responsible, too.
We had our head in the sand.
Yeah.
You know, we were not paying attention. We were not concerned about the right thing.
Because
you know,
we wanted it all, too. You know? I mean, you know, with well, anyways. Yeah, there's a lot of things has brought us to today. And, you know, will we learn? I don't think so. I'm not seeing too much hope for, you know, learning out there. It may take something big. It may take something just earth-shattering.
Well, there is a big thing right now, and it's called a depression that nobody wants to really talk about.
Right.
They keep telling us how the economy is improving. But you know what? I'm looking at more and more people who have lost their jobs, who are in increasing fear of losing their jobs. Of businesses that are struggling to make ends meet, of people who have not had raises in 2 years and have no hopes of getting one this year, despite the fact that we have also unmentioned inflation.
Yeah.
You know, we all see that. We go to the grocery store, an item that we were paying 89 cents for is probably $1.19 or $1.29 now. You know, and
in other words, everybody's trying to get the money they lost from someplace, and it's not working. You know, the grocery stores are trying to get it from the people because the people lost their jobs. The people can't afford to buy the grocery. It's a complete domino effect. When that last domino falls, you know, maybe we'll have an opportunity to come back out of it. They need to come up with a new plan. They need to come up with a plan for the 21st century. They can't
right.
do the same stuff that they have done in the past. We're not the same society anymore.
Now, and you know, we have a comment in the virtual auditorium about lost a lot of money in the stock market. You know, personally, the stock market didn't affect me because I had already had to pull out my retirement out of the stock market. And so it was irrelevant to me. So, you know, some people still have retirement funds, you know, those lovely funds that, you know, invest in multiple stocks. They lost a lot of money.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of investors lost a lot of money, a lot of small investors. you know, for the virtual auditorium, no, I was not retiring. I took the money out because I needed it at that time. So, therefore, you know, like a lot of other people, I pulled my retirement out. Now I don't have retirement, and, you know, I better get on the stick because, you know, in 30 years when I retire, what will I have?
Retirement, what's that? I know people who...
It isn't 30 years, it's 20 years from now.
Yeah, I know people who planned on retiring, and because of everything that happened, they can't. I mean, I know people who are, you know, 70 years old and going back to work if they can get a job as a Walmart greeter or working in the McDonald's or whatever because, you know, things just got too rough.
You know, and talking with my mother even, and she had her retirement fund, she had a state retirement in addition to Social Security, and, you know, she's talking about, well, if they change anything more or they do anything, you know, if the prices from the pharmaceutical company goes up anymore, she's going to have to choose which medications she drops because she's reached a saturation point. She recently changed one of her medications because it was going to go up to like $150 a month. And, you know, that was with her insurance, so I don't even know how much it was going to cost normally. You know, and so, you know, we're looking at lots of people that are not in as good a condition as she was for retirement. They are literally choosing which medications they're going to take. Now, is it in our best interest as a society to have people not taking medications that they should because they can't afford them? You know, isn't that going to result in higher long-term costs because they're going to end up sick again?
Right. Exactly.
You know, and just like, okay, me, I don't have insurance right now. I'm sick. Am I going to the doctor? No. You know, is this going to cause something long-term? Probably not. But I'm also not getting the tests that I should be having done. I'm not being checked for things that I should be checked. It could result in me becoming disabled and therefore a non-contributing member of society. Is that really cost-effective for society at large?
No.
You know, and you know, then they talk about they're going to start fining people who don't have health insurance. You know, that's stupid too. If you
yes, that is absolutely insurance. Ridiculous. That has got to be the worst idea of health care reform I've ever heard. I'm going to give you a fine because you don't have coverage. They're treating it like automobile insurance. I mean, come on, this is totally different.
No, an automobile is optional, okay? If you can't afford it, you get rid of it.
Oh, no, not here in Oregon. You have to have it. It's mandated.
Well, the car, you have to have a car?
No, you don't have. Well, that's true. You could get rid of the car and get rid of the auto insurance.
Right. You know,
I guess you could get rid of the kids and you wouldn't have to pay for their health care coverage.
You know,
people would probably do it, too.
And they talk about, you know, well, if you can't afford insurance, you will be covered by the state. And if you can afford insurance, you can buy private coverage. You know, I already fall in the gap between that. You know,
mm-hmm.
I make too much money to qualify for Medicaid, but I don't make enough to be able to afford the insurance.
Right.
So, you know, there again, you know, you're looking at this balancing act, and, you know, granted, when I started it, I didn't realize that the economy was going to do this, that I was going to end up in this, you know, economic rut. You know, I anticipated being without insurance for maybe a year.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm lucky.
It's been 6 years.
Now, I look at this different, though. I'm very lucky. I do have insurance. As a matter of fact, I've got dual insurance. Do you know how much I pay for medications? Nothing. Do you know how much I pay for my $30,000 in surgeries a year ago? Nothing. That makes me feel bad. It makes me feel bad for other people that I know are out there working just as hard as me. You know, they're a productive part of citizen, and yet they can't get health care. You know, and then people are worried about the government running the health care. Have you ever had to deal with the insurance companies running the health care? Let me tell you, it's a nightmare. An absolute. They'll tell you what you can do, how much you can have done. you know, whether it's covered, whether it's not, I mean, they just, it is a nightmare trying to deal with the insurance companies. And even they are tightening up, you know.
You're having your decisions about your health care made by a clerk who probably makes a little more than minimum wage.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
And is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Probably not, you know, and it's ridiculous in a sense.
So, you know, so I kind of have a hard time with that part of the argument. So then what do they do? Well, postal service. What's wrong with the postal service? I have never had a problem with the postal service, ever.
Oh, well, I cannot say that because postal service here, okay, post-Katrina, I think they waited 5 months to start delivering things like magazines. Okay, now in the areas that were flooded, I could see that. But I lived in an area that was up and running long before that. And where did the mail go? I don't know because I never got it.
Oh, that's too bad. I've lived here for 40 years, and maybe something got lost once a long time ago, but it was so insignificant that I don't even remember.
Yeah, you know, here the mail service, I have to admit, is less than wonderful. They've done some very strange things. You know, is it typical of an urban area? I don't know. This is the only one I've ever lived in. You know, I know in rural areas, you know, there were times when the mailman only came to our post office, our mailbox, maybe 3 times a week. But it really wasn't that relevant because we usually only drove to the mailbox 3 times a week, too, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it wasn't real close to where we lived.
Yeah.
But, you know, as far as mail service goes, for packages, for those who ship things, everybody has seen what a UPS package can look like. I have seen them. They look like they dropped them from a jet at 10,000 feet. You know, they arrived, and it's a miracle nothing is broke or that it's all there. Sometimes it's broke, sometimes it's not. But, you know, the box looks like it's been through a war.
Right.
Things come from the post office looking much better.
Yep.
But you go to the post office, and they have, you know, 4 windows and 1 clerk working 1 window. The line goes out the door. You wait an hour to, you know, buy stamps and mail a package. Yeah, come on now. That's ridiculous customer service. You know?
Actually, Gia, I know you need to go to a break, but somebody has brought up something very interesting. The Internet. What kind of impact has the Internet had on society? And I think that's where we've lost a lot of our jobs.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Folks, do hang on. It's time for us to go to a break. So stay tuned, and the Donna Shays will be right back, and we'll have Angela and Greg back with us then. Back to the Donna Shays. I'm your host, Gia Scott, and once again, I'd like to remind everyone to visit the website, www.exogenynetwork.com. You can sign up for the newsletter, wander around, explore it, let me know what you think of it. There are links there to take you to blogs, Twitter, and even Facebook, and you can send us questions via all those places. If you have a question that you want to have asked, you can also email it to me at giascott@gmail.com. I'm also monitoring the email during the program with Angela, Greg, and November tonight, and I'm trying real hard not to miss anything, despite all those different windows. And Angela and Greg are back with us. And just before we went to break, we were bringing up the Internet and how that has affected and will continue to affect our society. What do y'all think?
Well, go ahead, Greg.
Well, you know, one of the more interesting things that happened in the last year and a half for me was watching the Barack Obama campaign go from almost a grassroots level up through using services like Twitter and Facebook and just, you know, basically, you know, out campaigning the McCain campaign for presidency, you know, without having to send, you know, 100,000 people door to door to be able to try to convey their message, almost with a, you know, rock star type of mentality, but, you know, using the new technology to make make it, you know, a point of a political advantage. And again, going back to that craziness with the people posting the threats on Facebook and whatnot, it's everything has two sides to it. You know, there's an extreme positive to it, and then in these instances, you can look at it and say, well, so, you know, some of the rumor mongering and some of the fear over what's going on with the national health care debate and everything is also being fed by the instant communication with it. So it's kind of, yeah, kind of touchy, and we're watching things like the Postal Service and the local newspapers almost, you know, down to extinction, and people like to blame the internet for that. And I'm not so sure, you know, that it's not just, you know, people are going to go for convenience, you know, before they're going to go for, you know, something that they know. And I hate to sound, you know, odd about that, but it's just how I feel about how the internet's impacting things. It's definitely going to be something like we were talking earlier about how the next upcoming generation, 20 years of separation, you know, the way the kids are going around the Halloween candy and having it x-rayed, 20 years from now when they talk to their children, they're going to be telling their kids, you know, when I was a kid, we were allowed to actually go to someone's house, but we had to have our candy x-rayed. You know, you don't know that 20 years from now, people might not even be taking their kids trick-or-treating. It might end up like the Postal Service and the newspapers, and it might be replaced.
Well, you got a point there, Greg, and I do believe that it's a very positive thing for the internet. I believe that it brings our world closer together, and certainly there's always going to be negative in anything, but the internet really allows people to communicate and to take down the geographic barriers once and for all, and do a little business as well. Did you know that the fastest growing population on the internet right now is the Chinese? And in 2010, there will be more people, well, just the population from China online in 2010 will be more that is currently on the internet right now. And so, you know, if we look at it in a positive way, then we can say, you know, this is going to generate even more sales between or among countries. So I think it's very positive for the internet.
I think it's creating a global society. And, you know, we've had all this discussion, you know, from various people about one world government and the new world government and so forth and so on. You know, I really think it's time for us to start thinking globally, as a planet, you know, more of a planetary outlook than to keep focusing on these nationalistic views that we've had for the last few hundred years. You know, we're looking at getting ourselves into space. We're talking about contact with extraterrestrials. You know, we can't do that as Germans and Canadians and Brits and Americans and Brazilians and Mexicans and Africans and whatever. You know, we need to do it as a planet.
And if all of our commerce was connected, you know, through the internet, you wouldn't have currency speculation, you wouldn't have, you know, these real estate speculations and stock market disasters. If we had a common digital currency, that whole thing that we had last year would have been completely bypassed, but I don't think that we're quite ready for it yet. I'm sorry if I cut anybody off.
Okay, so my little take on the internet is I think it's just a double-edged sword. I do see where it's going to hurt things economically. You know, going shopping at the mall may go by the wayside in the future. You know what? We've all become time-constrained. I like to use the internet, too. Well, you know what? I never really had a couple hours a day to stick onto a computer to surf around, do my research, that type of stuff. So I have to give it someplace else. So I might do some of my shopping online, or I might, you know, instead of turning the news on, read it while I'm looking for something else, or these types of things. So I do believe there'll be a gradual decline in things like newspapers, mass malls, you know, it's other places where you can just, you know, press a button, put in a card number, and that's it, you're done. You know, same with paying bills. Yes, it'll hurt the postal office. Everybody seemed to be stuck on that one for a while. On the other hand, it is bringing our world closer together. I also find it very interesting that the paranormal topics and at the rate of growth of these topics across the Internet are just fascinating. And I do know that one of the largest listening bases for this network is China, of all things. And did you know that by 2015, China will be the largest English-speaking nation in the world?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So,
absolutely.
You know, the Internet has done so much for us. For those of us that lived in remote areas, it allowed us to connect with people with mutual interests. It allowed us to do research that otherwise would have required us to drive sometimes hundreds of miles to go to a major library. And that's just in the United States. There's other countries that are even more challenging, you know, as far as remote areas go. You know, and for the first time, with a click of the button, I could access information from the Library of Congress. Or I could see stuff about, you know, things that were in a museum in London or whatever. You know, it really allowed us to do so much more than what we could have ever done without it.
Mm-hmm.
I could pay bills in the matter of minutes that previously would have required me to either go to the businesses or to go to the post office and mail them and allow a week travel time for them to get there. Now I pay them and it's instantly done. There's no more lost in the mail crap. I don't know how many of you have ever had that happen, but it's horribly inconvenient when whoever loses it, whether it's the post office or their mail room, somebody would lose it. That doesn't happen with Internet transactions, you know?
Right,
it doesn't
right.
happen. You know, I love that facet because there is no more of that. You can get your bills the same way. There again, you know, I've had occasions where I didn't receive a bill, whether it was misdelivered or it got chewed up in the mailroom at the utility company or the whatever company. You know, I just didn't get it. And, you know, if I don't get it, I tend to forget it. And, you know, that would be terribly inconvenient too.
Well, you know, I can really side with you on that, and I agree with you there. And you know, that's a good deal of positive things that you just said there, Gia. And I also think that with, you know, additional sales online and additional types of communications, that it is you know, increasing the load at the post office. There may be a section of money or an account of monies that the post office is no longer enjoying, but at the same time, they almost tripled, if they haven't already, tripled their growth of mail to receive and deliver. I think the problem stems with the post office that because there is so much mail now that the Internet has caused, that they don't have the funds to, you know, hire labor to, you know, process the mail. So, you know, it's a catch-22, but I just think that the Internet has been a very positive thing. I know for myself and many people out there that we can access information at, you know, 24/7. We can send business letters and friendly notes to individuals, and we can even go through social networking sites such as Facebook and LinkedIn and Twitter and really communicate with the masses.
And that's one of the things.
Recently, I've been working on this fundraising for this event, for this nonprofit group. The Internet was a huge asset for me. About half of the letters asking for donations actually went via email. Well, at 48 cents a piece for stamps now? At
mm-hmm.
48 cents a piece, that was a huge savings, which
mm-hmm,
means
absolutely.
A lot more of the donations actually go for things besides, you know, silly administrative costs like sending mail asking for donations. But, you know, that's a realistic administrative cost for any nonprofit group. Mail expenses is a huge expense. And, yes, everybody knows that there's that nonprofit thing. But having done recent research on what the nonprofit mail thing is, it was going to cost us more to do it that way than if we just paid the 48 cents.
Well, you know, a lot of things that are changing mail-wise right now is they are taking advantage of the Internet. And they are not charging, you know, per email. Remember those rumors? Ooh, all your emails are going to cost so many cents to send. But now what they've done, and they've been doing this for the last 10 years, they've had the technology in place, and they literally do it now, is you go online and you say, you know, I don't want to go to the post office and buy a 48-cent stamp. And so they allow you to print that directly from your printer. And a lot of those have like a camouflage-looking code in it, and that pretty much takes the place of a barcode. It tells them where it's going and et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, they are taking advantage of the, you know, the digital age now, and I'm pretty glad that they're doing it.
And you can even do this, what do they call it, click and ship or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I haven't done it, but you can somehow, because I've seen it when I've gone to their website, that you can arrange to send a package essentially from your home, and it'll be picked up by a mailman. You know, that's a huge time saver for those
mm-hmm.
of you that have ever had to stand in line.
Absolutely.
I have spent usually an average of an hour per package that I've had to mail. I hate going to the post office. I would rather eat dirt than go to the post office here. You know,
be careful what you wish for.
Well, you know, the thing is that may be a regional thing, but customer service in New Orleans sometimes is lacking. And it does not get any better at the post office. And, you know, that's my least favorite place to go. Yeah, did I mind it so much when I lived in Arizona? Well, I didn't like it, but it wasn't as big a deal. It certainly didn't take as long, even though we only had one post office in that little town. It never took that long, not even on the first of the month
mm-hmm.
when everybody was picking up their delivered mail, you know.
Right.
So, you know, the post office, I think, just needs to start running themselves like a business. You know, businesses have to adapt, businesses have to provide customer service, and businesses have to figure out where unnecessary expenses are going.
Well, speaking of Internet and unnecessary expenses, I know that sometimes it's a little touchy for some people, but one of the things that I've been watching for years, and it is a family topic of discussion, and I'm still watching it, of course, is the evolution of the possibility of you being able to have your children educated at home over the Internet without having to go through the financial encumbrances of an entire school district. In some places in cities, there are 20, 30, 40 buildings, and with the population center shifting around, they've had to close a quarter or more of the schools in some of the larger cities. And my contention is that you should be able to have a centralized, you know, school for the different age groups and for the, you know, families where they want to have their kids go for the social interaction and so forth with the schools, but for the people that want the option or to just, you know, have a shorter day at the school and then, you know, have the kids outside doing something, but how much of their coursework and their workload is actually going to be on the Internet as it enters, I guess, what you'd call a second generation.
Mm-hmm.
And how is that going to affect society? I mean, if you think about it, it could have been done using telelearning, you know, 20 years ago over closed-circuit cable television and whatnot, but that's just really inefficient when you're talking about disseminating and then having a return of information. Well, with the personal computers, you can now do the testing and you can get the results from the students in individually, and we're not saying that, you know, we're going to have all the 7th graders in America, you know, on Facebook instead of doing their math, but it's an interesting development, and I was wondering if you all had any thoughts on that.
Well, personally, I think it's a grand idea. You know, I know that there are college and university students now that are taking advantage of online courses and being able to take tests and get the results instantly. So I think that, you know, with public schools especially, where there may be in an area which has been known to have people come in on the schools or, you know, has presented maybe an unsafe environment for the children, that may be another option. And at least, you know, a lot of resources are on the Internet and versus, you know, having to maybe purchase books from the university. You can have them right there or, you know, in conjunction with. So I think it's a grand idea, and I do believe, Greg, that your point is something, well, what you said we're going to see more of in the future because people do want to educate their children at home for whatever reasons. And I think that it would bring a lot of parent and child relationships a bit closer as well.
I know that 10 years ago I was looking at homeschooling my son using an Internet-based program. I had homeschooled my daughter through junior high and high school, and I decided that I wanted somebody else's supply curriculum this time. And, you know, that was essentially what I was looking at. And I looked at a number of programs and had actually chosen one. You know, he happened to die before we actually went that route, but that was the decision that I had made. And it was for a variety of reasons. It certainly wasn't going to be a convenient choice. We had dial-up. That was the only Internet we could get. They still don't have broadband or cable available there. And, you know, it was going to be expensive for me as well. But I felt that he would probably get a better education in his particular case. And, you know, that is a choice that, you know, varies between states, whether or not you can homeschool your children, and what criteria you have to meet. Not everybody has that option. Arizona at that time was fairly liberal in their requirements. How about you, November? Do you see the Internet becoming a bigger player in education?
Oh, absolutely. It already is. When we have students who don't pass a class initially, they can take online courses to get their class credit. It may actually change the fabric of society in the future, where more children do more of their academic studies at home and schools are set up for more as a social gathering of some kind with your, you know, extra credit little classes that you do. I could see that possibly. I could see schools that are strapped for money, you know, wanting to go to that type of program.
Well, you know, especially these rural schools. The area that I grew up in has consolidated school after school after school. Village school districts cover quite a big area with a number of towns. And before the consolidation, sometimes they would only have maybe 30 kids in the high school. All they could offer was the basic requirements that the state had. They couldn't offer things like physics and chemistry and foreign languages. Those classes didn't happen. So, you know, that it would offer a chance for these small, remote schools, especially the ones that don't have the option of consolidating, to offer these kind of quality classes to their students without having to hire another teacher.
It's interesting, and also the idea that these, you know, kids in America and, you know, England and the African children and Asian children all being able to do, depending on what time it is, you know, being able to do extracurricular activities together using things like video conferencing over the Internet is just going to be probably an amazing eye-opener for the way that these children end up learning to relate to each other. Where we have, you know, been raised in a world where you basically had, you know, strict geographic boundaries of where you could go within a day's travel, they're going to be able to communicate and, you know, do things that we would never have dreamed of.
What do you think?
I agree with you
there. The Internet affecting foreign language, people learning foreign languages. I know that my daughter suddenly has an interest in learning of all languages, Russian. She's been working on this for, like, you know, 6 to 9 months. Why she chose Russian versus any other language, I don't know. But, you know, are you seeing the upcoming generations being more interested in foreign languages than we were?
Absolutely.
That's true. My son's been using, he's 25, he's been using the Rosetta Stone program to learn to speak Arabic. I don't know which form of Arabic, I just know one of them. He's actually gotten pretty good at it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't
yeah,
know why
you know.
He chose that one, but that's what he chose.
It's like, why did my daughter choose Russian, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I believe that if we want to continue to communicate with countries and people in Russia and of course, Arabic, you know, is worldwide. You know, one of the things that a lot of Muslims, for example, do, no matter where they live, they all decide that they're going to learn Arabic so that there will no longer be any language barriers. So they don't have to rely on their own language or their own dialect of language to communicate. They just revert to Arabic. So very interesting how that is done, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, and the internet-based programs, you know, a problem when I was a teenager and learning German was, or Spanish, was finding people that spoke the proper version of those languages so that you learn proper pronunciation, so that you learn the idioms, and that you learned how the speech is actually put together, because that's very important. I mean, we have all seen those emails that have gone around about the translations from English or Chinese to English.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the photographs, you know, where they've translated various American, various signs and whatnot into what they think is American English. And, you know, it's been hilarious because it's just not right. They don't get that, you know, there's a difference between the denotation and the connotation, and sometimes it comes off horribly wrong.
Yeah.
And that's true between
funny,
any
funny.
Languages. Yeah, you know, it really was. I mean, yeah, I remember one sign was translated English, "You shall not die here."
Oh, no.
some of them aren't G-rated, but, you know, they just, words that you would never put on a sign in the United States, they would have in a sign across the front of the store. And it would just come off as so long. And then you have to realize, well, they were translating it from a foreign language, and, you know, somebody had really messed with somebody else in translation, you know, because it really did come off wrong. And before the Chinese Olympics, you know, those emails started going around, and I'm sure almost everybody has seen them, because they were incredibly funny, you know, and it was like 20, 30 pictures, and with the various signs, and it was like, I can't believe that. But, you know, you run into that any time you're translating. And we've all heard people translating something from their native language to English that did come off wrong, or the words were put together wrong. So when you're on
Certainly.
The Internet, you can actually talk to people who speak the language as their native language and hear how they actually put words together,
enunciate
sentences together. Yeah. And really how the sentences are constructed in normal conversation. Because, yeah, we all know that there's a lot of things that we say are not exactly proper. And if you're hearing it as a foreign language speaker, have to be very mind-boggling. You know, I think about some of the strange things that we say here in New Orleans, like making groceries. Okay,
right.
You know, even if you're from another area, making groceries sounds strange. Or in Arizona, you would typically hear people say, "Get off and come on in." Well, that meant get out of your car and come on in. Why
mm-hmm.
is it get off and come on in? I don't know, but we all did.
Well, I'd like to encourage everyone to promote the idea of having the Olympics in the United States. I know they opened the campaign for 2016 for Chicago, I think it was. And then we can all make the really poorly done, grammatically incorrect signs for our Chinese visitors.
Well, you know, Chinese ideograms, it's the whole idea. is somewhat beyond, challenging to Americans because, you know, they're done with brushes and, you know, just a shift of the bristles and you've created a different idea. So, yeah. You can really, really mess that up, I suspect, because we don't think in ideograms. We think in words, and you put the words together to make the idea.
Very
well,
true.
Be different.
Very true.
And that would be different entirely. But we do have a number of natively speaking and writing Chinese people who live in the United States and are fluent in English. So
darn.
Hopefully we won't have as badly done signs to be sent over the internet as, because by the 2016, there you go, Chinese will be the biggest group on the internet. They could really have a few laughs at our expense.
I agree with you.
Yep. And we have lots of comments in the virtual auditorium about everything from fires to the pronunciation of aluminum, the security at colleges, you know, all sorts of things. You know, and that's the thing is that we have many, many ideas that are concerning to people, and sometimes they seem to lack a true voice. Do you think that modern mass media is really addressing the needs of the masses for information?
I think they're just going with sensationalism. It's like we were talking earlier about the abducted children or someone's child ended up living in a shed, you know, for 15 years. And that's, okay, we're gonna pay attention to that, but we're not going to promote anything positive. You know, let's wait for the next bad thing to happen, and then we're going to, you know, repeat that, and then we wonder why people do things, you know, like that. Well, you know, you gave a really low person the idea that, you know, hey, I could get away with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really don't feel that the media is addressing the masses' needs for correct information. And not long ago, a couple years ago, there was a DVD that came out, you know, giving the example of, you know, the right information to the masses. And Rupert Murdoch, who owns Fox, for example, and actually he is the largest media owner in the entire world because he's in print and digital and television and cable and this, that, and the other. But, you know, there was, according to some old former Fox reporters, they said that Rupert would send out a note every morning to let them know what not to write on, what not to speak about, and if they chose a particular topic, then it had to be within, you know, a certain guidelines, and that would have been his guidelines, no other. And so a lot of reporters, you know, decided to leave Fox and go elsewhere. But even if they went to another network, it still doesn't say that they're meeting the masses' need for information. Because, you know, people hunger for information, and I believe that's why the Internet has been so positive, because we get the opportunity to get information instantly, and we get to have the opportunity to hear the opinions of others. So I think that, you know, mass media is going to have to change in order to accommodate their listeners or their viewers, or they'll start losing them to the Internet.
I think you're right.
Yeah, you know, the Internet is also where you find alternative news programs. You know,
mm-hmm.
This program where we bring on alternative topics. You know, without alternative voices, people don't even realize that there is something other than what they're being spoon-fed on the television.
Exactly.
You've got to have options. And do you think that, you know, the digital age and the availability of Internet radio is going to help precipitate the changes that need to happen?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, that is a booming industry, is internet radio. And we see, you know, individuals that even pay for that programming just so they can get the information or get the type of news or, you know, entertainment that they want specifically. So I think that internet radio is where it's at and where it will always be. And we also see local radio markets that have in the past been subject to only their region of coverage. And now they, too, have gone on the internet so that they could have a broader reach worldwide. And something else, when they can tell a potential customer that not only are we serving the local market here, but we're serving the entire world to get your message out.
Right, and it's one of the more interesting things we've talked before about the fairness doctrine. And since the healthcare issue has hit the political forefront in the United States, I really haven't heard anything about the fairness doctrine in the media, where it was suggested that in order for me to put my opinion out there, I would have to give somebody that disagreed with me equal time.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, but don't you think that that is up to the individual that is running their show? You know, that you can't go out there and find somebody that's going to debate with you for the entire length of the show, right?
Well, exactly, and that's a form of censorship in itself, because if I have to stop every 20 seconds during this broadcast and then put on somebody that's going to give you a diametrically opposed viewpoint, the reason for putting the message out there, whether somebody wants to hear it or not, is in my opinion, it's completely lost. And
mm-hmm.
hopefully it's that becomes one of these things that gets swept under the political rug, and those of us in the small, you know, internet media, as it's in its infancy now, we won't have to end up dealing with that, you know, 5, 10, 15 years from now. And, you know, it will be an open format of communication for people, and we won't have to, you know, have something that's over-regulated, even if we're going to be having another 2 billion English-speaking Chinese people who thankfully want to listen to what we have to say.
Yeah, certainly, certainly. But, you know, Greg, I don't think that, you know, even if that were enforced, you know, or the laws, you know, put out there, regulations put out there, they cannot possibly enforce that. Just like, you know, it's illegal to record an internet radio show and then, you know, play it all over your website, you know, steal content, and, you know, it's piracy. But to enforce that is another story. I mean, you don't know who in the world and where they've placed your radio program. So how are you going to, you know, find it unless you spend, you hire people to surf the web every day?
Exactly. Oh, I find it kind of complimentary that we are pirated. Thank you, pirate.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I say that because there's a catch-22. Somebody pirates the radio show, and, you know, you're not getting compensated the way that you need to be compensated. You did not give permission. On the other hand, you know, on the other side of the coin, it's exposure. So, you know, if there was a middle ground, it would be okay. But, you know, there's always going to be something.
On the enforcement side of the coin, then you're leaving it open for selective enforcement by some government entity, which then, if they didn't like your program and disagreed with you and you didn't have, you know, appropriate protocol followed with opposing views, they would then choose who they fine. And that becomes another problem in itself, and again, we're back to the censorship issue.
Well, I just don't believe that, you know, people will sit still, you know, whether as business entities or individuals, to sit still for any form of censorship. You know, people are not going to be passive about that, nor have their business or their monies or their rights swept under or into some type document with a stamp on it. So I wouldn't worry so much about that. I do see that they are trying to regulate certain things in the media for more equal opportunity. Because, you know, you take somebody like, well, Rupert Murdoch, that can, you know, has websites and television and cable and magazines and you name it, and put the presence on the internet, and it's very hard to compete with the billions of dollars that is soaked into those forms of media every year versus, let's say, somebody like me that would have a radio show trying to do it on my own or with a small group of people.
Exactly. And
they could essentially knock a small show, which is more likely to be your alternative news, completely off the air via the internet or any other method, simply with selective enforcement.
Mm.
And we'll hope that it doesn't take that route. And I'm hoping also that we end up with, you know, more freedom instead of less freedom, and we have less of a selective educational process when it comes to, you know, our kids and our school and our internet and, you know, tying things in with our business. It's a matter of change. It's more interesting, I think, than a lot of other things that are, you know, going on in the world when it comes to things like climate change. I think that the way that we interrelate with each other as human beings is probably actually more important than what we may or may not be able to prove we are or are not doing to the actual planet itself. And I think that in one sense that's a good thing, because if we can communicate with each other and we do find out, you know, hey, we're doing something that's not too great for the planet, then perhaps we could all communicate with each other to be able to effectively enforce that and stop it and, you know, keep ourselves from causing our own extinction through our own stupidity, be it through weapons or be it through melting, you know, all of the ice. And hopefully we learn to communicate, and we don't have somebody in the position of a Mr. Murdoch, but taking, you know, the quote-unquote evil movie villain slant and controlling everything that people want to think, you know, or think that they think, actually. And that becomes the, you know, even more dangerous aspect of it, is because, you know, to people that want to control the aspects of our lives, the most dangerous thing that all of us can do is think.
Yeah.
Well, absolutely.
Topic. There's been a lot of movement for various reasons, mostly economically inspired, to start charging for internet content. What do you think about that? Yeah, is it better than having advertisers? Which way do you think it should go?
I have no idea how they'd pull that off. That would be a hard thing to do.
Well, you know, I think that they're not going to be able to charge for every bit of internet content. I mean, right now we have individuals that are offering free content, and others are offering paid content to read or view on the internet. But to have every bit of content charged for, I just don't see that happening.
I was thinking more about certain programs, things like, okay, the local newspaper, like many in the country, is really about to go under. But they have a wonderful website. You know, if they started saying, okay, if you want to access our website for up-to-date information, you need to start paying $5 a month or whatever, you know, I would have to say I would probably pay it.
Well, certainly, and I think a lot of individuals would, but also, you know, the advertisers would also help to pay for, you know, they would put that extra dollars in just to be viewed, when you can say, hey, my website gets 12 million or more hits a month. That's pretty strong to offer to an advertiser.
It is. But are advertisers, you know, contributing to control of content?
No. I don't think that advertisers are contributing to the control of content at all. You know, they have to put their message out, but they're not able to dictate what that newspaper is putting out. You know, you can't have Joe Bob's Restaurant saying, look, I'm going to advertise with you for a year, but, you know, you're just going to have to get rid of that calmness because I don't like that person. You know, I just don't see that there's that much control. And certainly advertisers are not going to, you know, be the ones. They're the ones that are going to be wanting to advertise on the web because of the mass, you know, hits and views that, or impressions, that their advertising message is going to get.
You know, we're not forced
guess
to
what,
watch,
guys.
Oh, my
you
gosh.
Run out of time. So, folks, I thank you all for joining us tonight. And I want to thank November, Greg, and Angela for joining us tonight and being such fantastic guests. I've enjoyed it, and I hope all of you as well have enjoyed it, too, and found that it provided plenty of food for thought and more illumination for your personal journey towards truth. Join us again next week as we bring you Claudia Dallaire, author of Egyptian Revenge Spells, and another fascinating episode of The Dawn of Shades. With that, we are out of time. I'm your host, Gia Scott, and good night.